Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Two Pack Podcast.
Experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Welcome back, Packers fans. It's another edition of the Two Pack Podcast, and it's been a while since we've had back-to-back weeks, Aaron, so it's great to have you back as well, obviously, of course. So happy Thursday to you. We're recording this on Thursday. How's everything going? And I don't know if Aaron is with me or not. Aaron, are you there? Can you hear me? Okay. Well, while we try to reestablish connection, we are glad to be back here, obviously, a week after the Packers' first preseason game. And so wanted to kind of talk through some of the stories that have come about in training camp and throughout the NFL. So hopefully we can get Aaron on board sometime in the very near future to do that. While we're waiting for Aaron to come back and reconnect with us, want to mention our sponsor, because I can't remember if I mentioned them last week, and if I did not, I really apologize, because they have been a great supporter of ours. This is the second season in a row, and that is Ticket King. Ticket King, obviously a great source for your Packers tickets. I say it every week. You cannot find Packers home game tickets. Obviously, they are sold out for the next 150 years or so, it seems. So please keep Ticket King in mind for your ticket needs when going to Lambeau Field, and there's even an office that's really close to the stadium, so it's very convenient, but they also have great deals, great prices, and they're a great supporter of Packers Talk Net. So I think Aaron may be with us. Aaron, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can, yes. I don't know. I don't know. It's like the podcast gods were not working with us there for a second, but it's great to have you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Yeah, we had some technical difficulties.
I'm good.
I
it's been a while
you,
since we've had back-to-back weeks, so it's good to kind of get this thing into a flow, and I think we kind of figured out a little bit of a schedule, hopefully, for the season, so I'm raring to go, and I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have a regular schedule.
Yes, yes. So now that we've been doing this for a while, I think this is our fourth or fifth show, it's time to kind of introduce a couple segments here, and obviously with the Two-Pack Podcast being our name, there's going to be a lot of theming around the number two and double and those types of things. So the first segment that I want to do is called Take Two, where we kind of take a break, which is kind of funny because it's right out of the shoot in the show and we haven't started talking Packers yet, so it's kind of hard to take a break. You know, it's like when you get to work, like you take lunch right away, which is always
kind of weird. 10:31.
All right, well, Thursday on the calendar, but sometimes it's a week full of Mondays, so I don't know, depending on how everybody else's week is going, but take a break from the Packers talk and kind of discuss more NFL topics. So, Aaron, I'm just going to turn this one over to you and let you intro and kind of start it off. Obviously, Zeke Elliott, huge topic around the NFL. So kind of bring everyone up to speed with what's going on there and what your thoughts are.
Yeah, so I think this one is kind of interesting because obviously domestic violence is something that we've been talking about, unfortunately, been talking about since we started this podcast, really. I think it was one of the first things we did talk about in our first episode. But yeah, for anyone who hasn't been following, and if you haven't, it's probably a good thing, but Zeke was suspended for 6 games for his domestic violence accusations with a woman that he had been living with for a while. I think it was late last season. And he has now appealed the suspension. I think the hearing is coming up sometime later this month. But it's kind of interesting because I think you posed the question when it came down to it, you know, is it okay for Roger Goodell to make the decision on whether or not Zeke should be suspended? Obviously, I think that there's a lot of things that we don't know here. The fact that he was suspended for 6 games is quite a lot. I honestly was expecting him to not be suspended at all based on what I had read. I don't know if you had read something different, but it just sounded like it was more a case of somebody trying to get back at him and use his fame to make money. But again, not trying to say anything bad about the victim, because there's obviously, like we said before, a lot of things that we don't know when these kind of things happen. It's unfortunate that we have to be talking about domestic violence again. It's unfortunate that it's happening to someone. It's happening with someone, I should say, not to, but with someone who has such a promising future in the NFL. And I guess all I can say is that I hope for a positive outcome, or as best an outcome as possible for both sides of the issue here, you know, for Zeke himself and for the victim. It's just unfortunate, but I guess we'll see what happens when he is, you know, when his appeal happens. But right now it's looking like what did happen was pretty significant and very unfortunate.
I mean, we all, and Roger Goodell is still kind of in charge of this whole process. I know he's kind of brought in and I don't know if he's considered an arbitrator or a judge or what his particular role is, but this is the same guy that kind of oversaw the Ray Rice and the Adrian Peterson situation. So, I mean, to put you on the spot a little bit, Aaron, do you think that this suspension is getting reduced at all?
I could see it being reduced a couple of games. But again, if this was 2 years ago, I would say he probably wouldn't have been suspended at all. But with the NFL being under so much pressure right now to crack down on domestic violence, with it being unfortunately such an issue within the league, this may be their chance to kind of say, you know, we are not going to stand for this, and we're not going to allow this behavior to be okay, even though in the past they've looked past it, or kind of with, you know, obviously with the Ray Rice thing, they knew about it months in advance, and or what we know now is that they knew about it months in advance and didn't say anything. They tried to cover it up. So with this issue, I think that they're trying to be proactive, and that's why they hired an outside firm to do the investigation and say, like, you know, we're going to crack down on this. If there is any incidence of violence here, we're not going to stand for it. Depending on his case, it could get reduced, but I could also see the NFL just saying no, like, no, we're not standing for it.
No, and my hot take, which isn't so hot because people have talked about it outside of the circle here, is you've got a primo matchup in week 5 with the Green Bay coming into Dallas, and it's a rematch of the playoff game. And so if you're one of those follow the money conspiracy theorists, you might opine that maybe they reduce this thing to a four game suspension, and then magically Zeke Elliott is eligible to play his first game against the Packers in week 5. I don't know. We're going to talk more about Goodell later, because he's still kind of, you know, holds elite power over situations like this, but obviously a situation to watch, because it's going to have a huge impact. Now, again, like Aaron said too, this is not to take away from the victim or the situation and ignore the personal side of it and just focus on the football side of it. But with this being a football show, if we can take a football angle on it, I mean, this is a pretty big storyline. It's going to make a huge impact to the Cowboys season if their starting running back is going to miss a quarter of the season, as a team that, you know, has been in the thick of playoff races over the last 3 or 4 years. This could have a huge impact on them as well. But obviously life comes first, or at least hopefully it should. So I have a feeling, and you're right, Aaron, I think we did start talking about this right out of the gate. I have a feeling we probably aren't done with it, and we'll have an update on it on one of the next shows. I'm not sure when they're going to make their decision, but we'll have more to say on it. But, you know, obviously,
yeah.
Remember a couple
right.
of years ago, too, they did that. And remember that domestic violence campaign that they had? I mean, those commercials were admittedly kind of tough to watch, but I thought it was at least a good effort by the NFL to say, hey, listen, we acknowledge this, and this is not okay.
Right, which is why I think this time around they're saying, you know, this is an opportunity for us to maybe say, like, we don't stand for this, because they did handle the Ray Rice situation poorly and a couple other situations, you know, relatively poorly, I would say. But this is probably an opportunity for them to just say, we are not going to stand for this domestic violence stuff anymore. But going back to what you were saying before, from a football angle, obviously this does impact the Cowboys game. It's going to put a lot more pressure on Dak. You know, with Dak being in his sophomore season, he's already feeling a lot of pressure. Is he going to have a sophomore slump or not? And now that they don't have their star running back, it's going to put a lot more pressure on him to perform. So, yeah, it's an unfortunate situation all around. But I guess, like you said, we'll kind of wait to see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised if it's reduced, but I also would not be surprised if the suspension, you know, is reduced. So
that's a great point you make, because there's still questions about Dak Prescott and how good he really could be. He had a good season last year, but if he follows it up this year with something subpar, and if Elliott misses the first four games of the season or six games of the season, and mm-hmm. Dak is struggling because he doesn't have that guy to take the pressure off of him from a defensive standpoint and how the defense attacks the Dallas offense, then, you know, we get some answers to that question. So it's a storyline that's got several angles. And, you know, I think I'm with you and a lot of people listening right now. We want to see this come to a amicable conclusion that is acceptable mm-hmm. both on a football level and on a personal level. And obviously the personal side of things has to kind of take precedent here. I've talked to a couple of friends of mine who happen to be Cowboys fans, and they're embarrassed by this whole situation. And I think they really right. want to see Zeke Elliott humbled. They want to see him, you know, they're glad this is happening or now in his career versus a couple of years from now, or, you know, at a critical point in his, where he's, you know, he's at the end of a contract, or he's up for a new contract and stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm. Right, and I'm looking at their schedule here. So it looks like, yeah, the Cowboys are playing the Giants right out of the gate. So that's going to be a tough game for them if they're missing Zeke. Then they go to the Broncos, and they head to Arizona. Then they got an easy game. Well, should be an easy game against the Rams, and they're playing the Packers. So they do have a couple tough games starting out. Yeah, it would be tragic for them if they did lose Zeke.
They always get the Giants week one, and it seems like the Giants, no matter how good or bad they are, always win that game, don't they?
They do, and I don't know about you, but I'm a little scared of the Giants this year. They are looking like they could be pretty decent. They've got a nice receiver core over there, so that's a team that I'm definitely a little bit afraid of. Come playoff time, I could see us playing them again.
Well, and I mean, you're talking about the receiver core. I'm just talking about that defense. That defense is very underrated,
oh,
I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that they are a team definitely to watch for the Super Bowl this year.
The only thing not scary about the Giants is Ben McAdoo, because I don't know what's up with his hairstylist and that mustache, but, I mean, he's got to do something. And you're a girl, like, I mean, you got to give that guy a makeover. Like, how do you even start to fix that problem?
If I could do NFL makeovers, there's a couple people that I would pick. Probably Jerry Jones would be in there. You know, that hairstyle needs a little bit of work. There's a couple guys who could probably use some makeovers.
Mark Davis with the Raiders.
Yep. There's another good one. Absolutely.
All right. So on another note here, and this kind of does tie in a little bit to the Packers. So Seattle Seahawks defensive lineman Michael Bennett sat for the anthem during the Seahawks' first preseason game. And obviously we know his brother Martellus is a brand new Packer, and he's also very outspoken. So obviously, anytime somebody does this now and it's a big-name player, it's catching a lot of attention, and because of everything that happened last season and with the whole Colin Kaepernick thing kind of starting this. So what do you think? I mean, do you think Martellus Bennett is going to follow suit or maybe do something similar to what his brother Michael did?
Yeah, you're right. Martellus and Michael are both pretty outspoken. I think after Michael Bennett had sat down, he had said something about this is something that he's been doing for a long time. And I think it was confused in the media. The media took it as he's been sitting down for the national anthem. But he actually, for a while, has been sitting down for the Star Spangled Banner. So there's a little bit of a difference there. But I know immediately afterwards, Martellus Bennett did show a lot of support, and he was asked about it. Fortunately for Martellus, if he does decide to sit down for the national anthem in Green Bay, it sounds like Ted Thompson would be not necessarily supportive, but he wouldn't be against Martellus displaying, you know, his patriotism in that way. I think during an interview he had said, Ted Thompson had said, this is a free country, in my opinion, and free people can do what they like. So he, I guess, wouldn't really take a stance on Martellus sitting down. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him sitting down during the anthem. I think the interesting thing would be to see how people in Green Bay would react. I'm not sure Mike McCarthy would say anything. I'm not sure Aaron Rodgers would say anything, but I'd be interested to see how fans react to it because we are such a tight-knit community in Green Bay. It's a little bit different when you're in a bigger city where there are more voices. But for Green Bay, because, you know, we're kind of unified around the Packers, it would be very interesting to see what would happen. But if he does decide to sit down, I think that's his, like Ted Thompson said, that's his choice. He can show his views in that way if he wants to, and, you know, he's free to do that.
You know, that Ted Thompson interview actually took place today after practice. I was following it closely on Twitter because anytime Ted speaks, it's rare. He doesn't do it very often, so I kind of glue to it, and I want to hear what he has to say. And he did say free people can do what they want or they can do what they like. And that was an interesting thing, not because I didn't expect it from Ted. I never know what Ted Thompson is going to say, frankly. And if I can tease now, I actually he's the subject of my article going up tomorrow morning at Cheesehead TV. It kind of got me thinking about Ted Thompson in the future, and I wrote a little bit about it. So that'll be up tomorrow morning. But as far as the team goes, that's a great point that you make because you've got Aaron Rodgers who, you know, he's a cerebral guy and he's got his opinions and he's very careful and guarded with how he shares them and what he thinks. But I think that Martellus Bennett seems like since coming to Green Bay, he's really picked up on the culture there, really respects mm-hmm. the fans. He let the fans kind of almost help pick his jersey number. I almost think that he would probably – either get a sense from the team or he'd probably ask the team for maybe some of their thoughts before acting because it is his first season in Green Bay and the expectations are so high and you do something crazy mm-hmm. like that and derail any of that momentum, it could be kind of a negative thing on the field.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think because it is his first year, if this was maybe like his fourth or fifth year, I could see him sitting down, but because it is his first year, he might not want to stir up any controversy. But then again, who knows? I mean, if you follow him on Twitter, if people who are listening follow him on Twitter, you know that he's not afraid to say what he thinks. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised either way if he sat down. It would be interesting to see what the reaction would be, definitely.
Well, I don't know if I went on Twitter and just kind of did the hashtag Packers. I do that several times a day just to see what people are saying and what news is out there. And I'm seeing comments, and I saw a couple of fans, Packers fans, who have, you know, Packers supporter in their bios who emphatically said he'd be run out of town and chased out of town. And I thought that was really interesting because I don't, as a Packer fan myself, I wouldn't run him out of mm-hmm. town. Anybody that has something to say, as long as they're not harming someone, you know, I think everyone's got a right to express their feelings and their opinions. And I mean, I'll admit, if he's producing on the field and he's not hurting anybody with his opinion just because they don't agree with mine, I'm not in that camp at all. I'm not trying to run him out of town at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's kind of what Ted Thompson said too. The other part of his interview was he said, you know, he's able to separate his views from his players. And that's kind of how I am too. You know, like obviously there are certain issues. Like if you go back to Zeke, it's hard to separate the player from the issue because that ties so hard into something that's very significant. But if Martellus Bennett or Michael Bennett or other guys who are playing around the league want to sit down peacefully and protest, you know, their view, protest the national anthem and protest in that way, in my opinion, like you said, as long as they're not hurting anybody and they're still producing on the field, like that's they're free. It's a free country. They're free to do what they would like. Again, yeah, it's interesting that people on Twitter are saying that, and I would be very interested to see what would happen, what the comments would be if he did actually sit down. But I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I'm not as worried about it. I just always liked it. It's always interesting to hear the conversations and get the takes. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. there's no shortage of fire on social media these days. Just, I mean, in general, outside of football too. But you can tell football season is coming because everybody's getting really antsy and they want the games to start and the debates are kicking up. And I saw an entire day or a half a day devoted to fantasy football on ESPN the other day, which, by the way, Aaron, are you doing fantasy football this year? Have you done any of your drafts yet, and how is that going?
I am doing fantasy football, so I'm actually in the Bleacher Report Champions League because I took second place in my league last year at Bleacher Report. We have obviously so many employees, so we have several leagues going at the same time. And I took second place in my league, but because the guy who won was an intern, I got bumped up into the Champions League. So I'm a little bit nervous because it's funny. Instead of paying $20 like we did last year, we have to pay $40 this year. And I'm actually playing against people who are really good at fantasy football, where last year I won a lot of my games because people just didn't set their rosters. So I'm a little bit nervous. I'm definitely going to try to still get Jordy if I can. I know he's a really good fantasy receiver. And then obviously try to get Aaron Rodgers, but we'll see. What about you? Have you started your fantasy draft yet?
No. So if you haven't heard, I probably haven't given you this rundown yet. So I did fantasy football many years ago, and I came in second too many times in a row, and I got sour about the whole thing, and I just stopped doing fantasy football about 5 years ago, and I have not looked back ever since. So I'm a sore loser. I'm a terrible sport. I don't like to lose money. I don't like to lose anything, to be perfectly honest with you. So I don't. And Cheesehead TV, we're gonna do a fantasy league, and Al has been rounding up the writers to try to get the writers to get in on this. And I told him a couple years ago, I said, please let me bow out. I'm just, you know, and what happened was I was in our free league that we did back when we were with allgbp.com. I think this was back in 2013. I started out 6-0. You know, I was beating everybody.
Oh, wow.
And then all of a sudden, like, the bottom fell out. I don't remember what happened, but the bottom fell. I had Peyton Manning. And that was the year that week one, he threw like 6 touchdowns or 7 touchdowns in that game. Mm-hmm. And I was just steamrolling everybody. And then I literally, after the 6-0 start, I literally did not win a single week after that. I'm not joking.
Oh, no.
So I was like, you know, and it wasn't for money. It wasn't for money. It was just for pride. And I'm like, you know, as a writer and for my own personal pride, I think this is the final sign. I should probably not do this.
Yeah, that's almost the opposite of me last year. I started off with what I was like 2-4 or something. And then I just ended up, you know, and I was feeling really defeated. I was like, what am I even doing? Like, I don't want to play fantasy football anymore. I'm kind of like you, like almost a sore loser. And then somehow I ended up winning like 5 games in a row and made it to the playoffs and then ended up, you know, taking second place. So you never know. Fantasy football is like that. It's like regular football, like the Packers last year. Once things are looking down, Aaron Rodgers says we're ready to run the table, and off we go.
Off we do go. And, yeah, and I think this might be a fun thing to kind of integrate into one of our future shows in terms of, like, which Packers players we think are going to be the biggest fantasy darlings. You mentioned Jordy Nelson. That's obviously a great choice. Mm-hmm. Rodgers, of course. Martellus Bennett, I think, could end up being a guy who, you know, he could end up being a guy who doesn't get a ton of catches, but when he does, mm-hmm. it's touchdowns, you know.
Yep,
so it's kind of like that Bubba Franks. Do you remember Bubba Franks? Like, the only thing he ever caught was touchdowns, because I think his average per catch and yardage was like 2 because they were all at the goal line.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think, yeah, the Packers have a lot of good fantasy receivers. Jordy Nelson is always the top fantasy receiver. I was watching on ESPN. They were doing a mock draft, and I think he was drafted like 7th overall or something. So he's definitely up there.
Well, and with Rodgers throwing the ball, I mean, you and I could probably mm-hmm. get on some fantasy radars, too, in the NFL, let's be honest. I mean, he's one of the best in the game. And actually, that kind of transitions us into some more preseason Packers talk. So Ty Montgomery was somebody I wanted to talk about, and you found a really cool article, which I did get a chance to glance through and look at. And speaking of, like, Rodgers and the chemistry and what he does and creates for some of these other players, maybe talk a little bit about this really cool article on Ty Montgomery and just his feeling about what makes Green Bay special. And I took away from it, you know, a feeling of, wow, this guy is really, really smart. I hope he's in a Packers uniform and playing well for a long time, because he definitely has a great head on his shoulders.
Yeah, I think so. When I read this article, we'll tweet it out after the show, but it was on the Players Tribune. And basically the title of the article is, what makes Green Bay special? So when I saw that, obviously I had to click on it. I was like, oh, I want to know what Ty Montgomery thinks. And it's fun because, you know, a lot of players will come to Green Bay and it's like, there's this stigma of like, oh, it's cold and it's a small town. But it's like Ty says in this article, like, it is a football town. It is a community, and it is one of the best places to play football because the town just rallies around the players, especially when you are someone likable like Ty Montgomery. The team just seems to rally around you, and it's more of a supportive system rather than like a competitive system. You know, it's competitive, but it's supportive competitive. So I think there's one part in here where he says something about how you know, he's from Dallas and he was born in Mississippi. He grew up in Dallas. He went to college in California. And then when he goes back home, he tells people that he just loves living in Green Bay and they think that he's kidding, but he's like, no, it's such a small town that I love the people and I love the food and I love the beer. I think he says that we have really great beer, which the actual quote is, living in Green Bay is a simple life. It's not crowded. There's no traffic. It's quiet. There's good golf, good food, good beer, actually great beer. So it's like, it basically sums up all the things that are great about Green Bay. So when I read this, I was like, that's really cool to see that he has only been there for a short time and has already taken Green Bay as his home. I mean, we know that Aaron Rodgers has already claimed Wisconsin as his kind of home state, and he supports the Badgers and he supports, you know, Green Bay girls basketball, and he's always supporting Wisconsin teams. Same thing happened with Donald Driver. You know, he really took Wisconsin as his own once he moved there, and I think it happens to a lot of players. So we'll tweet this article out, but it was really cool just to see how he feels about Green Bay and to see, you know, his views on such a small town.
Great guy and a great teammate. And we keep hearing about on the football field, we keep hearing about Montgomery and this whole running back battle between he and Jamal Williams, and he did have a fumble. Montgomery had a fumble in the preseason game last week. So, I mean, what's your take on the state of this whole thing? Are you worried about Montgomery and ball security this year?
You know, it's hard because it's his first year. In the article, he also talks about how he feels comfortable at the running back position because it's where he played a little bit in high school and a little bit when he was at Stanford. So I think with it being his first year at the position full time, it's definitely worrisome. But, you know, what are other options at this point? We lost, obviously, Eddie Lacy and Jamal Williams, like you said, is the backup to Montgomery. So I guess we'll see. It doesn't look like he's going to play this week. So we'll have to watch some other preseason games and see what happens.
Well, I hope not. He's got the soft tissue injury. And so, frankly, Montgomery's a guy who's been banged up a few times in the past. He's one I wouldn't mind. They need to get these rookies figured out. And I think Montgomery's they know what he can and can't do. I don't think there's any reason why he needs to be out there on this particular occasion. And with another couple of days before the next game, it's like some extended rest. That would not be the worst thing at all. But,
yep.
You know, hopefully starts out hot. He's going to get a chance to go up against his former teammate one-on-one. No, I mean, they won't go against each other, but they'll be on the opposite sides of the field in week one when Eddie Lacy comes to Lambeau Field with the Seattle Seahawks. So that is just another wrinkle in that game, which already has plenty of hype surrounding it. So the running back battle, we've talked about that, and that's another one we'll keep an eye on. You know, and I know that – well, it will. Well, and I know you in particular, you know, are probably going to be wearing. Remember, you know that mask that has like half of it's happy and half of it's sad? I feel like that's going to be you during week one.
It is. Obviously over here in San Francisco, there are a couple people that I work with. Well, I should say one particular person that I work with, and he's a big Seahawks fan. So as soon as Eddie Lacy went over there, you know, we were talking back and forth, and I just said, it's hard to not like Eddie Lacy. It's going to be so hard for me to cheer against him because, you know, I've only ever seen him in green and gold, that I always, guys who are really good in Green Bay, it's always hard for me to see them leave and then cheer against them. But, you know, football is football. So at the end of the day, I want Eddie Lacy to do well, but not well enough to beat us. So yeah, you're right. I'm going to have the half happy, half sad face.
Right. Well, I don't care if Eddie Lacy goes off for 200 yards. As long as the Packers win the game, I'm all for everybody getting their slice of the pie. And one of the ways they're going to probably have to corral Eddie Lacy, because he tends to get into the backfield, as we've seen, is with some of those defensive backs. And some of these young DBs have been standing out, and I think it's a good thing, because with the concussion that Demaryius Randall suffered, which was egregious, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later, you know, he's in the concussion protocol. You've got a hamstring injury to Devon House, so out of some of the young guys, Rayshon Pringle, Marwin Evans is a returning, but Donatello Brown, Lindsey Pipkin, some of these names are just so much fun to say. But, I mean,
I know, that's what I was thinking, too.
Lindsey Pipkin, he has a cool energy to him. I mean, did you watch any of the preseason game? Did any of these guys stand out to you? I mean, do you think any of them have a chance to crack the bottom of that depth chart?
I did watch. I didn't really get to look at any of those in specific, any of those in particular. Like you said before, right now all we have is Kevin King and Quentin Rollins as the only healthy cornerbacks on the roster. And I would say Ladarius Gunter, we can probably count out of the, you know, the secondary battle there. It's funny that you said that. As I was reading these names too, I was like, this almost sounds like they're Ninja Turtles or something with their names. Lindsey Pipkin, Rayshon Pringle, Donatello Brown. Like, it sounds like a group of, if you looked at this, you would think that they were Ninja Turtles. But I did read some good things about Rayshon Pringle. It's going to be interesting. I was so optimistic going into, I would say, right after the draft, about what our secondary was looking like and what our cornerbacks were looking like. But unfortunately, like you said, with the injury to Quentin Rollins and then, you know, Devon House, it's, are we back to where we were? Would you say we're back to where we were early last season after Sam Shields got hurt? I'm feeling a little bit nervous, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think anything could equal that, and I don't think – I think Shields was a special case because he had several other head injuries that built on top of that one, and I think Randall might have had one already during his time since he joined the Packers. So, I mean, any head injury, one or five or ten, obviously the more you have, the worse, but are bad, and they and you don't want to take those lightly. So it doesn't sound like Randall's going to be out an incredibly extended period of time. I don't think he's going to play in the next week or two, and I think the Packers should take precaution there because he's obviously a going to be an important player to keep an eye on. I'm not quite at the point where I'm panicking yet, and actually because of some of the play of some of these young guys, you know, corner seems to be a position where the Packers have had some luck. And, you know, with Ladarius Gunter, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think he's going to be starting, but it was nice to see him finally force a turnover. I mean, he forced and recovered his own fumble last week, which was like a nice makeup from last season when he had zero turnovers. So, you know, that was something I talked about with Gunter. It's like you got to take that next step and be impactful. So I think these next couple weeks are going to be these are going to be big in terms of seeing what that defensive backfield looks like. But I do think, and I saw this tweeted out as well too by some of the either the beat writers or someone close to the team, is that I don't be surprised if they keep five safeties. I mean, they're not going to leave themselves shorthanded at defensive back, because if you're going to get anywhere, you know, the reason they fell apart last year was they couldn't keep up with some of these receivers. You can't short yourself in that area. It's a passing league, and you've got players coming into it like a Christian McCaffrey, for example, and there's just too many things that you have to be able to match up with defensively in terms of the opposing offenses that injury could strike, and that's just not something, unfortunately, that I don't think you can totally prepare for. But I'm excited with what I see with some of these young guys. I'm looking forward to seeing how week two goes.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of young guys, and then, you know, I kind of wanted to talk about Trevor Davis, because obviously he had the big punt return for a touchdown, and then he had another big punt return later in the game as well. He hasn't made an impact as a receiver, but we know that he's got all this great speed. We've seen this happen before in the preseason where a player breaks out and he's Mr. Oneida, as they say, and he's Mr. August, and they have a great training camp, and then they go into anonymity during the regular season. So since we've seen a little bit of Trevor Davis in actual game action and with the Packers, do you think that he's got some breakout potential, and this could be a year where all of a sudden he makes a huge leap and turns into a huge value the Packers got in the fifth round last year? Or do you think this is just hype train at this point and it's too soon to tell?
So it's interesting that we're talking about Trevor Davis again, because I think last year, after last season, I was looking through who they had drafted that previous year, and I was like, oh, Trevor Davis, I kind of forgot about him, you know, because he didn't make any sort of impact. And now all of a sudden this year, he's someone that we're talking about because he has, like you said, he had that that nice punt return, and he's been, Aaron Rodgers even said that he was the best bad ball catcher we've got. So I think, you know, I had said that right now we're so stacked when it comes to receivers that I think there's 12 players listed on the current roster, and they're probably going to cut that down to 6 with 4 of those guys already being locked up. So does he make it to the regular roster? I'm not sure. But I could see him being maybe a special teams guy. I would like to see him, you know, maybe get some reps on the field in a couple more of these preseason games. it's interesting because my boyfriend actually played with him at Hawaii and said, you know, when he was at Hawaii, there was really nothing special about him. He's kind of a one-trick pony. He doesn't really do anything special, but I think maybe that's what is special about him, is that you know what you're going to get, when for Aaron Rodgers at least. You know, Aaron Rodgers can count on him. He's predictable, and he can catch those bad balls. So it could go either way. I think because it's so early in the preseason yet, we still have a little way to go, but I would like to see him play again.
Well, and that's the key, and Montgomery mentioned it in his piece. It's like if you're going to get in the game and run the shot route, and or the shot play, and the ball is right there and you drop it, you might as well just keep running into the tunnel, take off your uniform, and get into your car and drive out of Green Bay, because you're done and you're sunk. So, hey, listen, if that one trick can be a touchdown to take the top off a defense and open something up underneath, or it leads to a score in one way, shape, or form during the season, I'm all for it. I think it's a little early. It's a little bit too soon, but that is actually really cool that, you know, that your boyfriend played with them, because you get to know these guys as people too. And that's also an important thing that we don't have as fans, is we see them play and we know what they can do as athletes, and we can see their speed and some of the things that they can do on the field. But one of the things that helps you understand why a player is thriving or not thriving also is what's between his ears. And so that's, you know, it seems like, just like Ty Montgomery, Davis seems like the smart kind of guy, saying the right things. You know, hopefully he can turn out to be something that the Packers can use for a few years. I mean, it's like, you know, you listen to Janis talk, and I don't get the sense that Janis is the smartest guy in the room. And I'm not saying that you have to be the smartest guy in the room, but when I listen to him kind of speak, and I don't know him personally, so this might be a little out of line, but I can kind of connect the dots between – why Jeff Janis is sometimes not in the right place on the field. It's like, I think he just kind of comes off as the guy who really believes in his ability and maybe just doesn't think he has to put the mental time in. And then you listen to some of these other guys like a Montgomery and a Trevor Davis, and it's like, okay, it's not for lack of effort. It's not for lack of knowing what's going on. It's just, football is a very physical game. It's a fast game, and things happen quick, and sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right, too, and especially when you're playing with Aaron Rodgers, and Ty Montgomery mentioned it in that Players Tribune article. You know, Aaron Rodgers is just, what makes him so great, aside from his athleticism, is the fact that he's just so smart. He has such a great football mind that when you're playing with Aaron Rodgers, like, you have to be ready for that, you know? And he's looking for guys who can also, like, you know, last year in that playoff game where he drew up the play in the huddle, it's like he's looking for guys who can change on the fly like that and who are as, you know, who are up to par, who can handle that kind of game. So I haven't really watched a whole lot of interviews with Jeff Janis, but I think, yeah, if you have the intellect as well as the athleticism, like, that's a winning combination in Green Bay.
Yeah. And if you're going to play with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you know, and I'm sure Peyton Manning's receivers and Tom Brady's receivers would say the same thing. If you have a quarterback who's very cerebral and very intellectual and understands the game like few in history ever have, then you also better bring your A game mentally if you're going to line up with them on the same field, I think. So, you know, I'm excited to see what Davis can do, and I think he's going to get his opportunities. I think he's pretty much the punt returner now. I mean, you bring one back for a touchdown, I don't care if it's against the threes or fours in preseason, that's making a huge play, and that's something the Packers have not had a lot of. So I think it's his job to lose, but, stranger things have happened. So, and also pray for his health. But, you know, and speaking of health, that kind of takes us into our double take segment, which is a topic that kind of makes you do a double take, you know, kind of like, what? Just something crazy that happens and makes you kind of stop and think and question, why is something going on? So, you know, some low-hanging fruit that we can pick here, Aaron, is the big hits in last week's preseason game. I mentioned the crackback block that Demaryius Randall took that got him the concussion. I mean, that was a really vicious hit that got up into under his chin, when the crackback block is supposed to be attacking more the chest and the shoulder area. And, you know, I get it's a physical play, and the defender, you know, the receiver is often blindsided. I don't understand why this play is still legal. So now you've got Randall in the concussion protocol, but later in the game, even worse, was Malachi Dupree and the hit that he took, which was just absolutely insane. I've watched it several times. Now, the defender didn't leave his feet, You know, so if you leave your feet, that's launching and you're done. I mean, you're sunk as a defender. That should be an automatic red card, as they use in soccer, to kick a player out. But the defender had his head down. He wasn't looking at what he hits, which is the common phrase you hear. See what you're hitting. You know,
mm-hmm.
He caught part of, I think, Dupree's chin. Dupree is also in the concussion protocol because of it, had to be taken off the field on a stretcher. Obviously, I think that speaks for itself. But the question is, you know, the officials don't want to be too hasty, but at what point do you start throwing guys out of games for stuff like that? Because this is what the league is trying to avoid in the name of player safety. And I think they need to start enforcing these things. I mean, if you get a guy coming off on a stretcher, something clearly went wrong. I guess I'm at a loss as to why this particular defender or these guys didn't get thrown out of the game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think some of those hits were really hard and, like, ended up putting guys in the concussion protocol. I think if you have, you know, sometimes, like you said before, the game moves really fast, but this is what you practice for. You practice to not do these things. And if you're going to go out there full steam ahead, like, make sure you're hitting your receivers in ways that are not going to hurt them and are not going to hurt you. If you have people who are repeat offenders, like, absolutely, I am for ejecting those guys, especially if it's in, you know, the same game. But if this is happening and you're doing it multiple times throughout the season, you should be penalized. Because at the end of the day, it's the health of the players. And like you said before, like, the CTE and the concussion discussion is so huge right now, that I agree with you that I don't understand why, you know, those plays were not penalized a little bit more.
Do you remember Brandon Merriweather?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he was the guy that used to get, you know, he was, I think he spent some time with the Redskins, with the Patriots, with the Bears, and he's the one that knocked Lacey out early in his rookie season in the Washington game, like his first or second carry, and he used to just launch at guys. I mean, some of these guys only know one way to play, but unfortunately, I think the league has to send the message of, okay, fine, but you're going to play within the guidelines and you're going to play within the rules here. And we've got to look out for some of these players and try to make football safe. Otherwise, we can't have football as a sport. And there's definitely ways to tackle people without launching your body at somebody. I mean, I don't know about you, if you've ever played in pads. I have. And I can tell you right now, the last thing I ever wanted to do was go in head down, because I was almost positive I was going to break my neck.
Right. I mean, I always think of – there's a couple of things. I think of JerMichael Finley when he was clotheslined, the game that took him out of football forever. It's those kind of things that's like – that was completely unnecessary, you know. And while he wasn't hit directly in the head, it ended his career forever and really had a huge impact on his life. So I think you're right that, like, these things, the player safety and – the way that the referees are handling these situations need to be taken a little bit more seriously. And then the other thing is, I always think of Ndamukong Suh and how he was kind of a repeat offender. And after a while, people just got fed up with it. You know, he was the one who was going in there and tackling guys illegally and hurting people intentionally. So it's guys like that that the league needs to be a little bit more strict with.
I think you might have just made the point of this entire show, which is, again, this kind of goes back to the very beginning when we talked about the whole Zeke Elliott thing. And it's like, this is people's lives. This is like,
mm-hmm.
you know, these are fathers, these are sons, brothers, uncles, you know, their lives are changed by this whole thing. I mean, imagine, you and I with the jobs that we do, if we have employers that are willing, we could probably get up and do these jobs for the next 30 to 40 years because we know how to do them and we can. Football is a very limited shelf life. So you take away a guy's ability to play. And, you know, Finley might have played another 3 or 4 years. Do the math. Average salary, he's a better than average player. I mean, you've got the money. And, you know, everyone says, like, oh, well, if I made that kind of money. I mean, you have to realize it's all relative. So if you're used to making $10 million a year, you're going to live on $10 million a year. You know, if you're used to making $40,000 a year, you're going to live on $40,000 a year. If you ask somebody to go from, you know, decrease their salary times 20 and manage a way to live, it takes some adjustment, especially if they've got families.
Right. And like you said before, too, it's the health of the players that really matters, because for us, it's so easy when we're sitting back and talking about football because we're not out there every day and we're not the ones sitting at home on Mondays just really sore from taking a beating the day before and essentially being in 10 car accidents in one day. I think JerMichael Finley, fortunately for him, he had an insurance policy that allowed him to cash out. And I think he did end up getting about $10 million. So he was one of the lucky ones. But I know I read that it dramatically affected his life and it impacted his relationship with his wife and his relationship with his kids, because football, like you said, is all that he knew. It's like, you know, for us, we do these jobs every day. And if suddenly, you know, someone's just like, oh, you don't have a job today, you know, your job is done. You know, we're kind of shocked. We're like, all right, well, now what do I do? You know? But for someone like Sir Michael Finley and some of these guys who get hurt and have season ending careers because of these hits, like you were talking about that happened last week, or, you know, career ending situations, it's like, that's their life. What do they do now?
Yeah. It's, you can try to put yourself in their situation, but, and I think we've seen enough examples of players who had to leave the game early and how emotional that decision was and how some of them actually get very emotional over it. Mm-hmm. And Aaron, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about Hard Knocks, and we're seeing some of these more, you know, kind of impactful moments and, you know, forks in the road for these men who are being told that their team is releasing them, and it's all caught on camera, and it's very raw. And, you know, we now know, and we've now seen, like, this is a huge, huge thing. It goes far beyond like, oh, the Packers lost their starting corner for 5 weeks. I mean, you've got a person whose entire life is turned upside down. And I have to admit, when you made that point, I stopped and was like, you know what? That was probably third or fourth on my bullet point list of things that I was thinking about when I brought up this topic, because of course the first thing we think about is, well, how's it going to impact the team? Who can step in? And it's like, we're so quick to brush mm-hmm. the guy aside and say, well, who can step in for him? Next man up. We hear about next man up all the time in football. The personal mm-hmm. element of it though is very real. And so I hope that, yeah. And to your point too, love the point you made about, you know, if you're a repeat offender, I don't care if the first time you did it was in week one and the second time is in week 15. You're a repeat offender. I hope the NFL takes the stance that they say they're going to on this whole thing. I got to be honest. I don't want any of my players getting hurt because of something cheap. And I think everybody probably feels the exact same way. So fingers crossed that the NFL is going to do the right thing. But, I mean, I don't know. How confident are you? I after last week, I can't say that I'm very confident right now. I need to see more.
Yeah, I think we always talk about the NFL being the no fun league, and it's because we don't let the guys just play like they used to play. But I think with the information that we have now when it comes to concussions and when it comes to these injuries and just how physical the game is, I'm sorry, but I would rather see someone be able to go home and, you know, spend time with their family and their friends rather than sitting in a hospital bed. So you know, if the NFL decides to crack down on this, I would not be upset about it. It affects the game, of course. Obviously, it affects the fun, I guess you want to say, of the game. But at the end of the day, you know, like we've been saying, it's the health of the players that matters the most, because these are people.
It really does. I mean, and then this kind of moves us right into our next segment, which is two-sided. And this is actually kind of fun. And I wanted to mention this. This is kind of really really meaningful for our show, because it was this concept. So two-sided is a segment we're going to start doing where, you know, you and I kind of take opposing viewpoints on a topic that's debate worthy. And it's kind of meaningful. And I don't know if ironic is the right word, but it ties into why I wanted to do this show with you in the first place, because I think you did a flip a coin with Matt, and I can never remember Matt's last name, but I remember you guys kind of going back and forth, and I was like, that's when I saw him, like, C-sharp, like, put her on the list. So that was when you made the list, and I was like, okay. And I think we had you on Pulse of the Pack shortly after that. So mm-hmm. So for this particular week, you know, on Two-Sided, we talked right out of the gate when we started the show about the whole Zeke Elliott situation. And obviously there has to be a decision made on that. And we were just talking about what the NFL is going to do to police player safety and these illegal hits and vicious hits. And right now, because of the way that the current CBA is structured, Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, has an awful lot of power. He's been referred to as judge, jury, and executioner, which is really true. You know, he kind of decides, okay, we have a problem here. This player did this. Player X did this. We're going to suspend him 4 games. Player X, player Y did this. We're going to suspend him 6 games. We've seen some of these suspensions not be consistent. There's been a lot of outcry about the system in which these punishments are divvied out. And then is Goodell acting with other interests in mind? Is money a factor? Is his relationship with some of these owners a factor? Although I do have to admit, I was kind of glad to see him take a hard line stance against Kraft with the whole Deflategate thing, as ridiculous as that whole situation might have been. Now you have him coming down on Ezekiel Elliott, and Jerry Jones is one of the big-time owners in the NFL. So the big question is, because, I mean, it's another, you know, we've got another 4 years before the CBA gets renegotiated. So the question that I want to debate is it a good thing for one person to be judge, jury, and executioner? And my take on this whole thing is that I actually do think that it's an okay thing, because Goodell is inside the NFL. He's inside the league, and he's dealing with these players and these teams every single day. This is his job. It's his livelihood. So he's got familiarity and the understanding of how these teams operate, some of these players. He's met some of these players before. You know, if he's involved from step one all the way through the end of the process, the unfortunate fact is that a lot of these NFL players end up having multiple issues throughout their careers. We've heard all the time about player X is back in Roger Goodell's office. They're meeting to discuss his reinstatement. I just saw an article today about Josh Gordon. Is Josh Gordon coming back? And there's no signs that he's going to be back in the league. But I think keeping it in-house and keeping that familiarity with Goodell, it's kind of like, okay, if you have more intimate knowledge of a situation, I think you're better equipped to make future decisions on it. So it's not the most ideal thing, and I think there's a lot of pushback on this whole idea, because we live in a society where if somebody's convicted of a crime, the arresting police officer doesn't then also get to decide what the sentence is going to be, whether the person is guilty of the crime or not, and then what the sentence is. You know, there's layers in this process. There's a jury that decides their fate. So I think we're kind of wired to kind of backlash against this one-man wrecking crew, I guess, as we call what Goodell is, and kind of the power that he's got. I just think if he's got that intimate knowledge of the whole thing, I think it's better served for him to make a decision on this whole process, because he's going to have that recall. He's going to remember, okay, player X did this last time. This is what I gave him. This is what I'm giving him the next time. When you've got different people coming in there, I think you kind of start the whole process all over again, and it might make it fair because you've got a fresh set of eyes on it. But listen, if you're going to give the commissioner all the power in the world, then make sure that you've got a commissioner in there that you like. I mean, the NFL commissioners, in terms of how they're hired and decided, I'm not exactly sure what that process is. But, you know, if it's that big of a deal, then you got to fight for it in the next CBA. I mean, I realize the players might have had to give this thing up because they wanted to get back to playing football and didn't want to give up their salary. But, I mean, I'm hearing a lot already about this next CBA process, and it sounds like, you know, there's already expectations that these players are going to take a more hardline stance on this issue, and that time's going to be missed if they have to, and there could be holdouts, lockouts. So, I mean, my whole take on this thing is that I don't think the system is so incredibly flawed that the NFL can't fix it. I think they've made their mistakes. But all in all, I think with the way that it's set up, with Goodell kind of making his decision from start to finish, I think the system is fine as it is right now. Aaron, I know you have a different take on the whole thing. I know you've got some interesting supporting articles here to kind of go along with it. But what say you about how healthy it is for the NFL that Roger Goodell is the start-to-finish guy when it comes to player discipline?
I definitely see your point. I think for simplicity's sake, having one man just make the decision and say, this is what we did last time and this is what we're going to do next time, it makes things simple, and then there's no reason to say there's no gray area. And I think the NFL is very much, it's a political system. You can look at the NFL and you can look at American politics, and there are so many similarities. I think there's opinions, there's voices, there's people who are, you know, behind the scenes working and getting things done. In my opinion, though, I don't think it's a good thing to have Roger Goodell be the only one making decisions on player punishment. I think like you said before, your point to where, you know, the police officer is not also the one who's deciding on the fate of the person that they're arresting. And it's like that for a reason, because one person is only one person and they only have, they have one opinion. So Roger Goodell's opinion might be a lot more harsh than someone else's opinion, you know? And when you have one voice, that's only one person saying, like, this is the way that I think it should be. When someone else could come in and say, hey, I disagree with you for X, Y, and Z reason, Roger Goodell might say, okay, I agree. I see your point. And now we can come to some sort of compromise in the middle. But then again, it gets very complicated. You know, do we start having owners or coaches come in and collectively make some sort of decision on how players should be punished? I think that maybe having multiple voices, not necessarily people who are directly related to specific teams, is a good idea, but other people within the organization having a voting right, you know, some sort of voting system to say, we looked at all the facts, especially for Zeke, and this is what we think, you know, collectively. That way Roger Goodell also doesn't have to go up against everybody and be this kind of polarizing figure who people are looking at like, you know, he's the enemy. I think right now, I mean, we saw at the draft, it happens every year. Roger Goodell gets booed. Why? Because he's like enemy number one. And it's like that because he's the only one making the decision. So it would take some heat off of him, and it would also kind of give other voices a way to speak about these issues. And that way the NFL wouldn't be so controversial. So I think that fixing it a little bit, having some other opinions in there would be good as well.
I don't know if you watch WWE, but I kind of liken Roger Goodell to Kurt Angle when he comes out, and then it's like his music is playing and the crowd just chants, you suck at every stoppage in the music. And it's like this thing that and Angle puts his hands up and he expects it and he embraces it by now. And then, you know, Goodell came out on the podium this year and was like, come on, Philly, give it to me. And he was trying to embrace the whole thing. And, you know, I mean, it's a tough job. It really is. And I don't know if this is like a good example, but I think about whenever the NFL has tried to hire third parties to come in and help situations, I don't know that they've necessarily moved the needle. And one of the situations that I think of is like this independent neurologist that's on the sideline that's evaluating players for concussion, and but yet we still have players going back into games that clearly have a head injury. And so are we really getting anywhere by adding a third party to – a situation related to players on the field? And I don't know that there's necessarily a right answer, but I just, in my particular argument, I think the thing that I kept coming back to when I thought about it was, you know, keep it, like you said, keep it simple, keep it in-house. And obviously with Goodell doing every step in that process, to me, it seems like that accomplishes that.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate the NFL's effort to bring in an independent neurologist on the sidelines. Because before there were obviously those issues, if we talked about the movie Concussion before, where they showed, you know, there was the NFL paid neurologist who basically was being paid off to say that concussions weren't actually happening in the NFL. So they're doing something about it. To your point before about WWE and Roger Goodell, it's so funny when I was watching the draft, and I think I said this last year too, I was like, why do I feel like I'm watching a WWE match right now? Why does this feel, people are booing him and he's out there playing into it. It's like, you know, you have to almost feel bad for the guy, but at the same time, like you said before, he's the one making all the decisions, good and bad. And usually people remember the bad decisions, so he's the one who's going to take the heat for it.
Yeah, and I think just maybe the demographic in Philly might have also had something to do with that. I mean, they're kind of your blue-collar, hardcore football fans. It's kind of what I expect from – I would expect the same thing from Jets fans, Giants fans, Patriots fans. I mean, I know we're kind of – staying in the Northeast, and you lived out there, so you probably saw it firsthand. But I think that this topic, I mean, as long as we're doing the show, I'm sure we'll talk about it again, because as soon as we get closer and closer to this next CBA, this is going to be a huge bullet point that the players are going to want to talk about, because I'm sure they're tired of it. Every time there's a ruling that comes out, you always hear players talking out and speaking out against Roger Goodell, and we've heard James Harrison talk about how Goodell is the devil, and, you know, some of these guys are very, very opinionated on this issue, and so I'm sure that there's other players that probably feel the exact same. I mean, thought it was a good discussion, definitely, and I mean, you know, some fun stuff to talk about. And obviously the preseason game, this next preseason game is on Saturday. So a couple more days before that takes place. And that'll hopefully give us some more stuff to talk about for next week, if we're going to do a show next week. And just pray, as I say every week, and I know everyone rolls their eyes and gets tired of it, just pray that these guys can stay healthy. I really hope that last week's game was not an omen for this season, because we've seen that happen before, and there's just some years where the stars just don't line up, and then you get guys that keep getting knocked out week after week, and it's like, you know, they won the game, but then you're constantly trying to follow Twitter to see if there's an update, and then it's like, okay, Monday, Tuesday, every day of the week, you're just on pins and needles because you don't know what the injury report's going to look like, and this team has got to stay healthy.
Right. Yeah, staying healthy is the key this year. The key every year, but especially this year.
Right, and that's my qualifier to everything. But, well, definitely good times. Good times, Aaron. Is there anything else for the betterment of the group before we sign off for this week?
No, I think that's it. Go, Pat, go. We'll see you in Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks, everybody, of course, for following us and listening to us. And speaking of following, please make sure, if you're not following us on Twitter, the show actually has a handle itself. It's 2PAC Podcast with the number 2 in front of it. You can follow me on Twitter at Jason Perrone. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at Aaron B. Underwood. And please don't forget Ticket King if you're looking for Packers tickets or your tickets to any kind of show or event. Give them a look and definitely consider them. Put them up against StubHub and see how they do. They actually sometimes tend to come out a little bit ahead. So it's been a fun show, and hopefully we'll be back at it really, really soon. Thank you again, everybody, as always, for listening to the 2PAC Podcast.
This has been another episode of the 2PAC Podcast.
Want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.